Today, I'd like to begin with a verse that I memorized when I was in college from the Old Testament or from the Hebrew scripture. And if you're from a different faith tradition or you're not a Christian or you used to be, or maybe you don't have faith or you're trying to figure it out, you can appreciate this. This is kind of a, I know this is kind of an old phrase, kind of an all skate. This applies to everybody. And I think it's a great way to start today. Here's what the author of this text says from the book of Proverbs. The integrity of the upright will guide them. The integrity of the upright will guide them. In other words, there's a kind of person who is actually led by their integrity. Their integrity leads them. Their integrity directs them. Their integrity informs all of their decisions in spite of the consequences. Then the second half says this, but, because it's a point, counterpoint, but the crookedness of the treacherous will destroy them. And we've all seen this. In fact, most of us have experienced this, that the lack of integrity by people who lack integrity, ultimately, there's a price to pay when a person leaves integrity in order to accomplish something they think is more important or get something they can't get any other way. So here's the question, because this sets us up for where we're going to go today. What ultimately guides you? You know, what's your North Star? Because everybody has a North Star. Everybody has some sort of guide. And a lot of times we don't really think through what it is, or we think we know what it is. And here's what I think we all have in common. We all hope that our integrity guides us, right? But here's what we're going to discover today, and here's what some of you have already discovered in life. We don't really know if our integrity guides us until our integrity costs us. And then we know. When you suffer for doing right, then you know. The interesting thing is, too, they're going to move on. This term, the Hebrew term for upright, it literally means to stand up straight. It means to stand up straight, to not be bent over. Because here's what happens. When we live our lives bent over, looking right in front of us, we make decisions based on what's right in front of us. We respond to what's right in front of us. Immediate versus ultimate. But the upright allow their integrity to guide them because they're not living for the immediate, they're living for the ultimate. They're taking the long look. They're making choices with that perspective. And those, as we're going to see today, those are the choices that legends are made of. Now, today we're in part two of a series where we're tracking along the story of Daniel from the Old Testament book of Daniel. Last week, we started the series, and the series began around 605 BC when King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, modern-day Iraq, invaded Egypt, and after conquering Egypt, went north to Judea, because Judea was a vassal state, or we would call it the nation of Israel, but Judea was a vassal state of the Babylonian Empire, but they had been misbehaving, and Nebuchadnezzar and his army shows up at the city of Jerusalem, and he says to the king, "You have to behave yourself, or I will replace you." And the king said, "Yes, sir, I will obey you." And he said, and Nebuchadnezzar said, "And just to ensure that you don't mess around anymore and you quit paying what you owe the Babylonian Empire, I'm going to take some souvenirs back to Babylon with me to ensure that you behave yourself." And so he included in these souvenirs were the best and the brightest young men in the city of Jerusalem. These were sons of the royal family. These were sons of prominent citizens. And essentially, they were hostages to ensure that Judea behaved itself and obeyed King Nebuchadnezzar. And among those, they were going to be taken back and basically be Babylonianized. They were going to be recultured and either serve the king in Babylon or scattered around the empire, again, to consolidate the power of Nebuchadnezzar. And among those young men who were taken were the famous four, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we're going to hear Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's story next week. Today, we're focused once again on this incredible young man, Daniel. Now, these young men, as we found out last week, were enrolled in basically a three-year internship program. They were given new names, new clothes. They were given everything new. They were basically having all the Judean part of them kind of stripped out, and they were being enculturated into Babylonian culture. But as we discovered last time, there was one part of that program that Daniel just could not bear to embrace, and his friends couldn't either. In fact, the text tells us that Daniel, he's anywhere from 13 to maybe 17 years old, the best that we can tell. So he's a young man. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. Now, these guys had kind of won the lottery, other than the fact they'd been kidnapped. If you just kind of set that aside for a minute, they were gonna eat and live indoors. Okay, that's rule number one and number two. One of my mentors told me years ago, you gotta eat and live indoors. They were gonna eat and live indoors, and they were gonna eat well. They were gonna eat from the king's table. But there was something about that that tripped Daniel's conscience and the conscience of these young men. And he doesn't tell us why this was a big deal, which was the point of last week's message, that sometimes our conscience gets dinged and we don't understand why, and we should listen to our conscience, because over time it will become clear. And blessed is the man and blessed is the woman who chooses to obey their conscience instead of violating it simply because they can't explain why to the world around them. So the point was simply this, that Daniel made up his mind ahead of time. He made up his mind ahead of time before he knew how his story would end. And that's what integrity was. And in his case, this was integrity informed by and motivated by his faith in God. And that early decision as a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old or a 17-year-old, that early decision that could have cost him his life became the standard for life, for the rest of his life. As Clay reminded us last time, the standards, this is so good, I thought, the standards that you resolve to live by determine the life that you live. That your future life is determined by the standards you choose to live by as your life unfolds. So fast forwarding, we're picking up in the next episode of Daniel. About 50 to 55 years go by. So there's about a 50-year interval where we don't know what happened in his life. The story picks up about 50, 55 years later. He's about 70 years old. And in that interval, the Babylonian Empire has been conquered by the Medes and Persians. So there's been a big change in the world that he lived in. But he's still there in the royal palace. And now the king of Babylon is a gentleman that's known in history as Darius the Mede. There's a famous Darius the Great. This is a different Darius. Darius the Mede. Again, Daniel's about 70 years old. And during this interval, Darius the Mede, the king of Babylon, decides to reorganize the entire territory. And here's what he decides to do. He decides that he's going to appoint 120 governors that are going to govern the kingdom, and these governors are going to report to three administrators, and he chooses Daniel as one of the three administrators. Now, Daniel is a foreigner. He's a Judean, and he's a former slave. When he first came to Babylon, he came as a slave, but there was even more. Because of Daniel, as we're going to discover in just a minute, the text tells us that Daniel had so distinguished himself among the administrators, there's just three of them, and the governors, 120 of them, by his exceptional qualities, that the king, Darius, planned to set him over the entire kingdom. So now it's going to look like this. There's going to be Darius the king, and who's going to work through Daniel to oversee this entire, the whole basically Medo-Persian empire, not empire, but kingdom in that region of the world. And he's not even a Babylonian. He's not even a Persian. He's a Judean. So this didn't sit well with the rest of the administrators or the governors. And that's where the story kind of picks up speed. Here's what happened. So at this, the administrators, there's three of them, and the governors, 120 of them, they tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs. So Daniel has been in government, and this is kind of relevant, but you know, he's been in government for over 50 years. He has had influence in the government, from the Babylonians now to the Medo-Persians to the Persian Empire. He's been in government for 50 years. So they're thinking, surely there's some dirt, right? I mean, 50 years, right? Surely there's some skeleton somewhere in a closet. This is amazing. But the text says they were unable to do so. They couldn't find. They have access to all the information through all the generations. They can't find anything to pin on Daniel. The text says this. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. And this is important, especially if you're a teenager. Daniel was that kind of person at 70 because he made up his mind to be that kind of person when he was about 17. Integrity guided him. We could just stop there, right? I mean, how inspiring is that? But we're not. Finally, the story goes on. Finally, these men said, we will never, this is amazing to me. This is inspiring. We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless there's only one area where we think we can bring charges against him. Unless it has something to do with the law of his God, because he is basically a lawyer, a law enforcer as an administrator. At the same time, they know he's committed to the law of his God. And if they can find conflict between those two things, they know they may be able to pin it on him. But I just want to say something about this statement right here, the law of his God. If the day ever comes when the only thing that those of us who call ourselves Christians, if the day would ever come when the only thing that those of us who call ourselves Christians can be criticized for has something to do with the law of our God, or more specifically for those of us who are Christians, for the law of our King, if the only thing people could find to criticize us for is the fact that we believe God sent a king into the world and we are surrendered to that king and we are surrendered to the law of that king because the king gave us one law, we are to treat each other and our enemies as God through Christ treated us. Imagine if the only thing we were guilty of was that. Our world, our nation, our families would be in a better place. That is the challenge of the story that is about to unfold. So they decide to lay a trap and they go to King Darius and they say, Darius, and this is probably two or three of the administrators and a handful of governors. So it's just, you know, it's not everybody. They went to Darius and they said, King Darius, we have gotten together and we all agree that you, the king, should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, just 30 days, except to you, if they pray to any god or any human being except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. So they appeal to the king's ego. They say, basically, King Darius, we have an idea. You're such a fabulous king. We think we should have 30 days of Darius, just 30 days of Darius. There's gonna be floats and music and bobbleheads and fireworks and balloons and t-shirts. It's gonna be amazing. And King, you deserve it. I mean, again, they're appealing to his ego. Oh, and one other small detail. Oh, King, Your Majesty, this is such a big deal. We want you to issue the decree and put it in writing. Now, this just goes right by us, but this is such a big deal. In ancient times, and in certain parts of the world today, unfortunately, the king's word is law. That whatever the king says, that's the law. And the king could be arbitrary. The king could say, today the law is this, tomorrow the law is that. So the Persian Empire is in the process of trying to rein in the, you know, the indiscriminate laws that different governors and rulers would create. And because most people couldn't read, and something written down had power. In fact, it was almost magical in ancient times. So they said, we don't want you to just decree this. We want you to write it down, because here's why that was a big deal. We want you to put it in writing so that it cannot be altered. Because see, I can say something today and say something else tomorrow, but if I write it today, it is still written tomorrow. That's the way they thought about laws. And of course, that's the way we think about laws today. In accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. In other words, we want you to make this an unrepealable rule. And the king's thinking, well, it's just 30 days. This isn't like something that's edict that's gonna go for generations. It's just 30 days. And this will give it special status. It makes it irreversible. So, you know, appealing to his ego, so King Darius said, I think this is a great idea. And he put the decree in writing. And they knew there was no way that Daniel would go for a month without praying to his God. Now, again, the music changes, right? Now, when Daniel learned, because he wasn't there, of course, he wasn't invited to that little meeting. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, in other words, everybody knows about it, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened, and this is where the story intersects with me and with you and with you. What would you do? What would I do? I mean, this is This is the question that we've had to ask multiple times in our lives. We're gonna have to ask it multiple times more. What do you do? What do you do when you're certain that doing the right thing is gonna cost you? What do you do when you're certain? I mean, there may be some wiggle room. You don't know the future for sure, but it's the best that you can foresee your future. If you do what you know is right, it is going to cost you. Or let me rephrase it for those of us who are Jesus followers. What do you do when you're certain that faithfulness to your King, to Jesus, is gonna cost you? And believe it or not, I know the answer to the question for you. It depends on what or who actually guides you. That's the answer to the question. If integrity guides you, then you will do what integrity requires of you, regardless of what it costs you. If you're a Jesus follower, the teaching of Jesus and the integrity involved with the teaching of Jesus will guide you regardless of what that decision costs you. This is so important. This is when we discover, in fact, it's the only way that we discover if our faith or our integrity is disposable. And this is when we discover if our integrity is a means to an end that comes to an end when it no longer serves our end. This is when we discover if our faith is simply a means to an end that comes to an end when our faith no longer serves our end, when it no longer serves our purposes. And let me just tell you, blessed is the man or the woman, blessed is the teenager whose integrity has been tested and you passed that test, because then you know. Let me say it a different way. Blessed is the man or woman or teenagers whose integrity has been tested, but it's actually not a test. You see, you can study for a test. It's never really a test. It's more like a pop quiz. They say, we want you to do this, and you have to decide in the moment. You're expected to do that, and you have to decide in the moment. Everybody's going to, and you have to decide in the moment. The team is going to, and you have to decide in the moment. Hey, after the thing, we're gonna go to this other thing, and you have to decide in the moment. He's gonna ask you out. He's gonna come over and ask you out, and you have to decide in the moment. You have to decide. It's never a test. We can study for a test. We can prepare for a test. It's a pop quiz. And blessed is the man or the woman or the college student or the teenager who passes that test, because then you know who you are. Then you know whose you are. And it's the only way to know. And when you pass that pop quiz, there is something that happens on the inside of you that can't happen any other way. Back to the story. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, everybody knows, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. And three times a day, he got down on his knees in public and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before, just as he had done when he was a teenager. Because why change now? This is the question. Who's in charge? This is Daniel's lesson for us. Daniel's like, wait a minute, who determines outcomes? Nebuchadnezzar thought he determined outcomes. He's been dead for years. Darius the king, Darius the Mede, he thinks he determines outcomes. We'll see. And so then the question comes back to me, and the question comes back to you. Who do you think determines outcomes? Well, ultimately, because this is how the story plays out, and they had spies everywhere, Daniel is spotted praying on his porch or on his balcony. They were watching. And Daniel's accusers, of course, went to the king. And the conversation went something like this. Your majesty, hey, just real quick. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human being except to you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den? Are we remembering this correctly? And Darius is like, yes, and your point? And they're like, well, we... we dropped by Daniel's house to drop off the 30 days of Darius swag. You know, we're handing out all the swag to get ready for 30 days of Darius. You remember Daniel, right? You remember Daniel? Daniel is one of the exiles. Like, he's not even from here. He's not even really one of us. From Judah. You remember the little itty bitty insignificant region of Judah? You remember Daniel? He pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day, and not to you. And we're all so disappointed, aren't we, fellas? We're so disappointed. We hate bringing you this mess. Now, of course, Darius is totally, this is just freaks him out. He's completely distressed by this. And he's determined, wait a minute, okay, this was a trap, and he decides somehow he's gonna save Daniel. He calls in his lawyers. He's like, certainly there's some sort of loophole. He knew Daniel's reputation. He knew Daniel's reputation. It's why he chose Daniel in the first place. It's why he decided to elevate him, but he's stuck. He was cornered. Here's another lesson for another day. He was cornered by his own ego. So the king, after some period of time, I think some time went by, so the king gave the order and they brought Daniel and they threw him into the lion's den because that's what the law required him to do. And the king said to Daniel, as they're lowering him into this pit full of bones and leftovers and we can't even imagine, may your God, this is amazing, may your God whom you serve continually, may your God whom you serve continually in spite of what I decreed, may your God whom you serve continually rescue you. May the God who you are more dedicated to than your own preservation rescue you. And then a stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. Then there's more detail. And then the king, Darius the Mede, returned to his palace and he spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him and he could not sleep. And you know what he's thinking? I'm just making this part up. He's thinking, 30 days of Darius. Yeah, right. Whose idea was this? Why did I say yes to this? What a fool I am. The sun comes up and the text tells us that the first light of dawn, the king got up and he hurried to the lion's den. And when he came near the den, this is important, he called to Daniel. He doesn't have them remove the stone. He's experienced that before. He says, Daniel, has your God whom you serve continually been able to rescue you from the lions? Now, let me tell you how this works, how they thought. Here's how they thought. If the lions don't eat the guy's innocent. He's been, this is the jury. The lions are the jury. If they don't devour the person is innocent. And if Daniel is innocent, then the lions that devour him and the only person to give credit to was this incredible God that Daniel must worship that seems to be more powerful than the gods of the Medes and Persians. Now, the problem with this story is most of us know the end of the story. And most of us, if you grew up in church, you've heard the story. It's one of the stories that we liked as children because there was lions and tigers and bears, oh my, and there's all the adventure of this, right? But if you rush to the end of this story, this is so important. If you rush to the end of this story, you miss the point of the story. You miss the lesson of the story. Because the point and the lesson of this story, the takeaway for you and the takeaway for me is not what happens next. The lesson, the takeaway for me and the takeaway for you is what has already happened. And what has already happened is this, that Daniel's primary concern was not the outcome of his decision. If his primary concern had been the outcome of his decision, he would have made a different decision. His primary concern was faithfulness. Faithfulness to the God, faithfulness to his God, I should say. To continually serve the God as the king recognized, the God that you continually serve. Faithfulness to God for Daniel was the win. The moment he knelt and prayed on his balcony, the moment he knelt and prayed on his patio where he could be seen by others, That was the win. He won the moment he knelt to pray in spite of the king's edict. That was the win. The outcome was up to God. There was no, this is important for us because there are preachers that will tell you different. There was no for Daniel, and there is no guaranteed outcome because that's not the issue. Which leads me to ask of me every time I think of this story and every time I see the picture I'm about to show you in just a minute, which leads me to ask of me, Andy, what's my win? What's my ultimate? Which leads me to ask of you, what's your win? What's your ultimate? And as you consider this, let me just encourage you with this. Do you know what you can't lose? What you can't lose is what you do. What can't be taken away from you and what can't be taken away from me is how I respond. No one, this is amazing, no one can take what you do away from you. But everything we gain by sacrificing our integrity can and will be taken away. 100% eventually. It is lose-lose. You lose your integrity and you lose what's gained when you gave up your integrity. Or to put it within the context of those of us who are Jesus followers. Whatever we think we've gained, in fact, Jesus addressed this directly in his during earthly ministry. Anything we think we gain by walking away from our faithfulness to our King, we ultimately lose. The only thing that can't be taken away is our decision to serve, to use Daniel's term, to use the king's term. The only thing that can't be taken away was our and is our decision to serve him continually, to remain faithful to him regardless of outcomes, knowing there's no guaranteed outcome, but the outcome isn't the win. The win is our decision to, as Jesus invited us to do, to follow. When I was in the eighth grade, there was a momentous event in the life of our family, and I've never told the whole story because it's a long story. I don't have time to tell it today, but maybe I'll come back and tell the whole story one day because it was something. But when I was in the eighth grade, my dad was a pastor, and was a pastor of the First Baptist Church of Atlanta. He was the associate pastor. He wasn't the senior pastor. The senior pastor was gone. There was all this turmoil in the church. There was a group that wanted my dad to be the pastor. There was another group that didn't think he was qualified, you know, lots of details. And so there was a moment during all that conflict when I was in the eighth grade that he had to make a decision. And doing the right thing would possibly, in fact, probably cost him not just his job, but his reputation in his denomination, maybe his career. It would certainly impact our entire family. And in the midst of all this, as the moment of truth was approaching, and it was like, either way, you got to decide. A woman came and visited him and brought him this picture. It was about this big and it was framed, and this was the picture, and she brought it to him and she gave it to him. And they were close friends, so close that she said, when she gave him the picture, she said, now Charles, I remember this woman, now Charles, not many people referred to my dad as Charles, but she could. Now Charles, she said, what do you notice about this picture? That's what she asked him. And my dad, as he would tell the story, said the first thing that came to his mind, because it's the first thing he noticed, he said, I notice Daniel's focus. And in that moment, and in the days that followed as this moment of truth came, this became a defining moment. This picture and that the conversation became a defining moment for him. It became a North Star, so to speak. And he wrote out a little phrase that I grew up hearing a thousand times. It became such a North Star for him that it made its way into probably every other sermon that he preached, you know, from that point forward. In fact, Clay quoted it last weekend. Obey God and leave all the consequences to him. You obey God and leave all the consequences to him. You obey God and you leave all the consequences to him. So that's what my dad did. It was a defining moment, not just for him and his career. It was a defining moment for me. I'm still talking about it. I have this picture. It was a defining moment for our family. It was a defining moment for me and my sister in terms of how we made decisions. And could we really trust God with consequences and just commit to do the right thing regardless of what it might or might not cost us? Somebody's here today because our crowd is so large and people watching from all over the place. And you're thinking, did someone email Andy and ask him to teach this lesson because this is so relevant to you right now? It's not accidental. And there you are. And at some point, in the maybe the near future or the distant future, you're gonna be on the other side of this decision and you're gonna have something to look back on. And you, listen, you are deciding right now what you're gonna look back on tomorrow. The story that you're gonna tell a week from now or a month from now, you're writing that story right now. And this narrative is an invitation to you to write a story that is worth telling and worth repeating and that you'll never be ashamed to tell. Back to the story. Darius says, Daniel, has your God whom you serve continually been able to rescue you from the lions? And I don't know, I think Daniel pauses for dramatic effect. Just wait. Then he says, he shouts through the stone, my God sent his angel and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because, I mean, you know, let me just play into your worldview, because I was found innocent. So God shut the mouths of the lions. I mean, I passed the test. Clearly, I'm innocent. The lions didn't harm me. I'm innocent in his sight, nor have I ever, my whole life, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty. Which, of course, you know, we have to be a little bit curious at this point and think, okay, so that's what God did for Daniel. Will God do that for you? If you do the right thing, will God close the mouths of the lions and everything works out and your story ends up with a bow? If you do the right thing, does it matter? Because you see, if integrity and faithfulness is a means to a happily ever after ending, is that really faithfulness? Is that even integrity? Jesus followers, and I'm including myself, if the outcome matters more to us than doing the will of our King, we're not Jesus followers. We're Jesus users. And Judas tried that. Now, back to the story regarding the gentlemen who arranged this whole thing, they come back into the story at this point, and it's gruesome. In fact, I'm not even going to put everything on the screen that happens next, but I'll give you part of it. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and their children. And the reason they did this is legacy ends. You will be remembered no more forever. But Daniel, who made up his mind as a teenager, continued to make up his mind according to the law of his God, the will of his God, and he continued to make the choices that legends are made of, and we're talking about him all these years later. The choice to do the right thing, regardless. Again, and then we're done. Those are the stories we tell. Those are the people we celebrate. Those are the stories worth telling. You have an opportunity, not every day, but every few days, to continue or to begin to write a story worth telling. So, choose, because it's a choice every single time. It's mostly a pop quiz, but it's a choice every single time. Choose a story worth telling. That is the win. That's the choice that legends are made of. Fathers, mothers, those are the stories you want to tell your children. And some of the decisions you're making today will determine whether or not you're able to tell your whole story. I hope for you, you're able to tell your whole story. That you become the legend and the hero when your children tell their story later on. And we'll pick it up there next time in part three of the choices legends are made of. Let's pray together. Father, thank you. Thanks for preserving this extraordinary, extreme, an entire lifetime wrapped up in this almost final decision of Daniel's life. And Father, we have all been there at some level. Some of us, we would just admit our greatest regrets, we knew better and we didn't do better. We knew better, we didn't do better. And those are the stories we hope no one finds out about. Some of us are still paying a price for that. So Father, from this moment on, from this point forward, for people who aren't even religious people or consider any kind of faith tradition, for all of us, would you give us the wisdom to know what to do with what we just heard? Would you give us the courage to step in there? And Father, for those of us who claim to be Jesus followers, I pray the day would come when the only thing anyone could ever accuse us of would be things related to our undying loyalty to our King. Raise up a generation of Jesus followers who live and love like that, we pray. And it's in the name of our King we pray. Amen.